Town program. On a Wednesday afternoon from Seasons Main Street, Bangor, and her Quality Jewelers broadcast studios on The Pulse.
Chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road.
Rich Kimble, Ryan Waning, and Bruce Pratt with you, and it's time for Sports Lit 101, our opportunity every week to talk about terrific books, often from the world of sports, although not limited to them. This week's book, though, is one we talked about just a couple of weeks ago, and it was a terrific read, a wonderful collection of essays called Sports Business Unplugged, Leadership Challenges from the World of Sports. And one of the co-authors of the book, Rick Burton, joins us on the GNM Family Market phone line. Rick, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm sure Bruce has told you in the email correspondence that we talk about this book as the downtown of books because it fits perfectly what we try to do on our show all the time. And it's just a wonderful read. And even some of these essays that were written a few years ago have very much remained timely.
Well, I appreciate you guys saying that. I think the shame in life, maybe, or maybe the truth in life, is that history has an awful habit of repeating itself. So I think, a lot of these things that we were commenting on then, comments or, areas like inclusion, just getting it right, they keep popping up, and we're looking at it right now with what the NCAA and the ACC have announced in the last couple of days related to House Bill 2 in North Carolina.
That was absolutely going to be my first question. This is Bruce. I think, as you've pointed out, all of us have at times taken the appropriate shots at the NCAA. But I thought in one of the later essays in the book, and I should mention that these were originally in the Sports Business Journal, you make the point that if we get rid of the NCAA, that elephant in the room might not be something we really want to see.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we have to remember when we throw rocks at the NCAA, we're really throwing them at all the schools that are members of the association. That's the last A in NCAA. And you're throwing rocks then at Duke and Notre Dame and Stanford, a lot of great schools who have come together as an association and created a game plan that they think is best for this type of sport, elite sport, in I think 39 different categories, and if you take it away or you alter it dramatically, I think there's a chance that something that a lot of us really enjoy would really get thrown off.
Now, will this move by the ACC and the NCAA have a business effect? I mean, will it really reverberate enough economically that people in North Carolina might think twice about what they've done?
Oh, I think they're thinking twice already. The NBA pulled their All-Star game, and I think now what you're going to see is, NASCAR is going to have to do something given the number of races that they have there. Sport has oftentimes been a great vehicle for social change, and I think that, we can go back 70 years ago, 1946, Jackie Robinson starts playing for the Montreal Royals. It's usually associated with 47. When he comes up to the Dodgers, but he's actually playing really all across the Northeast in 46. And I think if you look at all these different places, Muhammad Ali, conscientious objector status, just during the Vietnam War, the Black Power salute by Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 68 Olympics, there have been a number of times where the athletes themselves or the conferences or the leagues have had to be the ones that took a stance about something that wasn't right. And I'm pleased that the NCAA and the ACC have come out with really strong positions on this particular topic.
Rick, the Summer Olympics this year, a big moneymaker for the networks, and yet ratings were down quite a bit. And do you think part of that is because of the fact that maybe even since the last Olympics, viewing habits have changed so much and people aren't as eager to watch something that's been tape delayed?
I think that's absolutely correct. I think there were a couple of other pieces that Brazil got a lot of bad press for a long time. And, marketers or PR people will say that, any press is good press. I'm not always convinced of that. And Rio took a shellacking, I think, just for so long. And then I think the other piece that emerged was that a lot of the athletes that kind of dominated these games had dominated in London and had dominated in Beijing. And there may have been a little bit of fatigue. Michael Phelps was back at it again. Usain Bolt, on the track. There just seem to be a number of cases where I wonder whether Americans kind of got ho-hum about some things. But before you get to any of those pieces, I think you're exactly right, that a lot more was being consumed online, and you have people with shorter attention spans who are getting the information as it happens, and they're not going to wait around and then watch it in a long format.
You talk a lot in the book, and there's several essays about the Olympics and about the benefits and the costs of hosting. And even though it's one of the older pieces from back in 2009, when you talk about the United States possibly facing a generation without playing host to the Olympics, that seems to be perhaps more true than ever before. Is that a bad thing for the United States?
Well, I think it is, and the way I know about it is, you know, I used to be the chief marketing officer for the U.S. Olympic Committee, and the monies that were generated at the L.A. Games in 84, and Peter Uberoth led that charge, the funds that kind of were brought in helped fund the development of athletes for years and years to come, really more than a decade. And the same thing happened at Salt Lake, which is the last time we had the Games on American soil. And it led to a lot of development in Salt Lake and Park City that has led to us being a much stronger country when it comes to some of the winter sports. When you don't have the games in your country for extended periods of time, you don't generate revenues that flow back to the national governing bodies. And so next year is a really key year because Los Angeles is up for 2024, and that decision gets made in 2017. And I think, you know, we'll know a lot about whether or not we're going to have gone 22 years without the Olympics or maybe possibly even longer.
One of the other things that you and Norm talk about in the book very often is the difference between branding and advertising, and how some companies feel that they get a great bigger bang from their buck by being the sponsor of a stadium or get naming rights than they do from their regular advertising. And can you talk a little bit about how that's come to pass?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. First, I got to give a shout-out to Norm O'Reilly, who's actually down in Rio right now with the Paralympic Games, and he's my co-author, and I want to make sure that, you know, that he gets recognized. I think the whole concept of branding and sponsorship and marketing and endorsing, they've all kind of gotten jumbled together, but I think if you were talking to straight marketing people and the strategies they're trying to use, sport is a great vehicle, but sport also creates potential not only on the imagery side, but also on the endorsement, the 2 + 2 = 5. And, you know, there's a lot of research that suggests if I like Coke and Coke is an official sponsor of the Yankees, that I'm going to like both of them a little bit more because I like soda and I like, you know, the Yankees. And so I think when you frame the question, I think marketers are always looking for something that provides a lift to their brand. And I think that sport has so oftentimes it touches kind of the emotional buttons on fans, and it's why your show is a big hit and why people tune in. I mean, sport is just a huge part of their life, and marketers, I think, are always trying to find those things.
We're talking with Rick Burton. He's the co-author with Norm O'Reilly of Sports Business Unplugged, and I'm especially intrigued by the essays that try to make the sports world a better place, and a fascinating one about the rollerball flashback and how virtual reality replaces violence. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd love to, and I think that what's going on right now with video games, they are becoming as big in some places, and this is going to be hard for a lot of listeners to believe, as organized sport, you know, the organized professional sports leagues. I think they had 50,000 for an event at the Staples Center in L.A. not too long ago, watching gamers play video games. And I think if you look forward at the marriage of video games and virtual reality or augmented reality, people being able to put on these devices like Oculus Rift, and being able to feel like they're sitting inside the stadium or sitting inside a game that they couldn't attend in person, we're going to see, I think, a blurring of video games, virtual reality, and fantasy leagues that are going to come together and are going to change, I think, a lot of the landscape of how we consume sport in the future. And I think that the place you got to start looking at it is if concussions continue to be a major issue for the NFL, that playing the game in person where someone actually gets hurt, Is it possible that a video game like Madden steps into that space? I think it's too hard for most people to go, yeah, sure, like that would ever happen, because I think too many of us are NFL fans. But as we see more and more players retire before they even turn 25 or 30, I think the game has got some real challenges, and video and virtual reality may be able to help us get around some of that.
Rick, are we at a point now in the world of sports where the business side, the sponsors in particular, and maybe we've already reached that point and gone beyond it, where they begin to have strong input into how the games are played and even things like where the games are played?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, a lot of people believe that the majority of money comes into the sports world through the sale of tickets. And while it's an important piece, much more money comes in through the broadcast rights and through sponsorship. And the sponsors are, in general, the ones that are buying the advertising, and they're the ones that are putting the signs up at the stadium, and they're buying the VIP suites and things like that. If the sponsors or the advertisers, the marketing people that you talked about before, start to move away, if they start to find other things, or they start to use their leverage, which is to say, okay, I'll be a sponsor, but I don't want any more of this, you'll start to understand that not that sport is being co-opted by the big brands, but they have certainly become a lot more influential. And one way of saying that is that maybe instead of the commissioner being the most powerful person in sport, it's going to possibly be someone else.
One of the questions that I'd like to follow up with that is I see this creeping into college sports too, where schools are reaching out for other kinds of funding. They're, you know, getting Nike swooshes, whatever they are, on their uniforms and the like. Do you think the NCAA can avoid the temptation of selling its soul as an organization to more and more marketing opportunities?
You know, it's a tricky question, and I have to first kind of say it's not the NCAA as a body in Indianapolis. I think it's the university presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of them are probably trying to find that proper balance, which is that their primary purpose is, you know, the academic mission of their universities. And I think they understand that sports does this incredible job of being kind of the front door for a lot of people to a university. It creates the visibility. But their mission has still and always has to be the academic side of the house. And that's why they exist. That's the business they're in. And I know there'll be some listeners that say, no, they're not in that business. They're in the athletic business or the sports business. But I think if you had the presidents in a room, they would tell you that it's about the research that their university is doing. And back then to this, how do we make the world a better place? Sport has to have its place at the universities. It's been there since the NCAA's introduction in the early 1900s. But I think the question is really hard because a lot of presidents and a lot of athletic directors are under a lot of pressure to bring in more money to keep their teams competitive. And that means a whole lot of other people at the universities have got to work really hard on making sure the academic mission is upheld.
You and Norm look around the world, look at Canada and other countries as well, and I'm wondering if are there other nations that do it better? Are there other nations that do some things that we might want to take a look at adopting ourselves in America?
Well, I love the question. I spent 4 years in Australia as the commissioner of the Pro Basketball League down there, and not only did I love Australia and the people, but I loved a lot of what they were doing with sport. And I've talked to the chancellor here at Syracuse University about the Australian approach of sport for life and in the concept of playing it young and playing it old, and facilities. And there's a lot more government interaction with sport in a lot of countries, but particularly in Australia. We do not have a minister of sport inside our political machine, but almost every other country in the world, you know, their Olympic committee is really a governmental thing. And there is a minister of sport who is looking at how to use sport for the benefit of the community or, you know, of the population. So short answer to your question, yeah, I think the Australians do a lot of things really well in the area of sport. And I think they've got a lot more people involved with sport for a lot longer period of time.
Well, one question I'd like to ask you before we have to go is, when you look across the face of sport in general in America today, and I'm particularly, I mean North America, because so much of our sports are interlocked with Canadians, do you see sports more as a unifying theme or a unifying opportunity, or do you see it as one of those things that keeps us divided? Are we always going to have fans who can't stand the other fans, or are we beginning to see sport in a bigger dimension now?
Well, sport unifies us, and it's a universal language. It's one of the few things we can still talk about. Most of us are uncomfortable talking about religion or politics, sexual orientation. And there's so many different areas where people aren't sure if they're saying the right thing or if they know even whether they should talk about it. But sport is kind of that last safe ground. And I think that sport does so many wonderful things in our communities. I think what we've got to watch for is that the parents of children who are coming up through organized sport, that the parents are not ruining it for the kids or ruining it really for everyone else. And I don't want to lay it on all parents. You know, I'm one myself. But I think that kids are getting out of sport at earlier, organized sport at an earlier and earlier age, and they are retreating to settings like video games where they can actually play unsupervised. And it's been a big issue of mine for a long time, is that the three of us, when we were growing up, probably went outside and played unsupervised sport and had a good time and made up our rules and learned how to get along with other people. Sport now for children is largely organized, and as the kids are starting to rebel away from that, and they're setting up kind of a different algorithm, maybe the wrong word, a different paradigm of playing indoors. And I think that's a bigger issue for sport taken as just a kind of a general concept.
It's fascinating conversation and a wonderful read. Sports Business Unplugged by Rick Burton and Norm O'Reilly. Man, we could talk to you all day. Rick, thanks so much for being with us to talk about this terrific book.
Yeah, it's great to be on with you, and feel free to call back anytime you think I can add something to the show.
I'm sure we would love to have you back, and we'd like to meet Norm over the phone, too, and thank Mona Hamlin at Syracuse Press for always keeping us informed.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.